Gittin on Daf Nun Hey Amud Beis, which is a lot of the Gemaras that tell the story about the time of the Churban Beis Hamikdash. So everyone should feel comfortable leaving whenever they are exhausted. Please don't stay. I'm happy to talk to myself. It's not a problem at all. So we have the Gemara in Gittin Daf Nun Hey Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom where the Gemara says, Akamsa Bar Kamsa Harv Yushalayim. Because of the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed. And we'll see in a minute what exactly that story was. Atarna Golta V'Tarna Golta, because of two chickens, Charav Tur Malka, the city of Tur Malka, the Tur means a mountain of the king, was destroyed. We'll see in another Daf Gemar what exactly that story was. Asaka Derispak, because of the side of a chariot, Charav Beitar, that's why the city of Beitar was destroyed. So the Gemara is now going to go through each one of the three stories, and we're going to explain in great detail what exactly took place. Number one, says the Gemara, four lines from the bottom. Akamsa Bar Kamsa Charav Yerushalayim. Because of Kamsa, Mar Kamsa, Yerushalayim is destroyed. What happened? Ahu Gavra, there was somebody who had a friend. Tirachame Kamsa, his friend's name was Kamsa. Ubal Devave, and his enemy was Bar Kamsa. So they had very similar names, but very different kinds of people. One of them was a friend, one of them was an enemy. Avid Sudasa, so this person made some kind of party, some kind of celebration in his house. Amarle the Shame, so he tells his gopher, he tells the person who is sending out the invitations, Zil Aisili Kamsa, I want you to invite my friend by the name of Kamsa. Azal Aisile Bar Kamsa. By mistake, the messenger goes and invites someone by the name of Bar Kamsa, who happened to be the enemy. Asa Ashkechei Davi Yosef. So now the party begins, the celebration begins, and this wealthy person who is throwing the party sees that his enemy is sitting there. Amar Lei, he goes straight up to him and he says, Mechti, Hahu Gavra Bal Devave Dahu Gavrahu. You are my enemy. What are you doing at the party? My Baisacha. Kum Puk, second to last line, he says, get out of the party. Amar Lei, so Bar Kamsa is humiliated, but he doesn't want to be further humiliated, so he tries to negotiate. He says, Ho va asai, once I already came, Shavkan, why don't you just allow me to stay here? And I will pay you for everything that I eat and I drink. So it's not like you're going to lose money on me. Why don't you just allow me to stay here? Amar Lei, this wealthy person says, Lo, absolutely not. Amar Lei, so he tries to negotiate further as to allow himself to stay behind. Yahiv Nalach, I will give you to make palga de sudasech. Not only am I going to pay you for the amount of food that I eat, but I'm willing to pay you half of the cost of this entire celebration. Amar Lei, Lo, he's not willing to hear it. He doesn't want to negotiate. He does not allow it. Amar Lei, Yahiv Nalach, to make kulu sudasech. He says, I won't only pay for half of the meal, for half of the celebration. I will pay for all of your guests. And I will fit the whole bill. I just don't want to be humiliated. Amar Lei Lo, absolutely not. And because of that, Nakde Biyade, he picks him up by the hand, Va'ukme, and he throws him out, Va'afke, and he doesn't allow him into the house. Now in Shulchan Aruch HaRachayim and Hilchas Beis HaKnesses, Shulchan Aruch gives the following case. Let's say, back in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, they also had the shtiblach that people had in their own homes. So the Shulchan Aruch says, what happens if a person gives up their house on behalf of a shul, and they want that people should come and daven in their house? And now I get in a certain fight with somebody in the community and I don't want them coming into my house. I don't give them permission to come into my house. So the Shulchan Aruch says, you don't have a right to aser your house on one person. You don't have a right to say, oh, one person in the community, I don't allow them to come into the shul, which happens to be housed in my house. If you don't like one person and you don't want them coming in, you have to say, no more minyan in the house at all. Says the Mishnah Berurah, where does that come from? Where do we get such a halacha? We get it from this Gemara here. So it's important when we go through Agadot HaGemaras to realize it's not just a bunch of stories. Sometimes the stories have very important and serious halachic consequences as well. And here the Shulchan Aruch paskins a halacha based off of this Gemara, and that is that if a person gives their home over to a shul, you have to be careful that everybody is treated equally. Even though there are some people in the shul you might like, other people in the shul you might not like, but because sometimes singling somebody out might do something that has terrible consequences, therefore we assume one does not have the right to do that. So, what? Right, but it was humiliating him publicly.
If I make a wedding and somebody comes, I can't throw them out.
If you make a wedding and somebody comes, you know, I think about that a lot, because sometimes you make a wedding and you have mishulachim that come and sit down at the wedding and start snoring money from everybody, and it bothers people. It bothers the Bali Simcha. So I think that's different. I'm not sure that's the proper practice to go and throw them out. I don't know. But I think that might be a little different, because over there, first of all, Malm Pnei Chaver Barabim is a very serious prohibition. The Gemara says somebody who is going to publicly humiliate somebody else is considered like you were Shofech Damim. The Gemara says, Kilu Shofech Damim, to the point that some want to even say, Kilu Shofech Damim means maybe we should say Yahar Gval Yavar. The same way someone who's asked to kill somebody else You have to be willing to give up your life as opposed to doing that. So over here, maybe there are those who say that if somebody forces you to go and be mevazah someone, to be mevayish someone berabim, maybe you should be obligated to give up your life for that as seriously as we would take shvichas davim itself. I remember I saw in the Shevet Halevi, my father didn't like it at all, but I remember I saw Shevet Halevi wants to say the same way that we find a discussion that the Gemara mentions about somebody, a Kohen, who is shofech damim. If you have a Kohen who is responsible for murder, so we assume that the Kohen is not allowed to duchen because yedechem damim aleihu, the pasuk says your hands are full of blood. So the Shevet Halevi wants to argue, maybe he should say, someone who's malum pnei chaver v'ravim also doesn't have the right to duchen because he's also considered to be someone who's a shofech damim. So he happens not to be correct, we don't assume that way. But my point in bringing that out is that being malum pnei chaver v'ravim is something that we take very, very seriously, and a person needs to be careful. Again, if it's something that's going to destroy my own life, so maybe that's a different story. But over here, the Shulchan Aruch case is talking about where you have a public shul that you invited to come and daven in your own home. So now your home became the public place. So now you don't have a right to take that and to single anybody out and be mevayish them in front of others. You're saying it might not be the same as a private party? I'm not sure. But here the Gemara's case is about a private party. Right. Right. So that's a question. How do we react when somebody's there that we don't want to be there? Not sure. Not sure the proper response. I'm not sure the proper reaction is you should embarrass them and publicly humiliate them.
No, I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. How can you equate this case to the case of
Shul? Interesting. Interesting question. I don't know. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. So now let's go further. Four lines into the top of Nun Vav Amud Aleph. Amar. So now Bar Kamsa is publicly humiliated. He's thrown out of the house. He's not allowed to stay at all. And he says to himself, "Hol v'haviyasvi rabbanan. Here I was in a home that was full of rabbis. V'lo machu bei, and nobody was willing to stick up. Nobody was willing to stand up for justice and make sure that I was allowed to stay without being humiliated. Shma mino, you see from here, kanichalahu. You see from here that obviously they don't care. And this is a Musar Haskel the Gemara teaches us. If you're in a place where something is going wrong and you do not stand up to what's going wrong and you have the ability to stand up to it, it shows that you absolutely don't care. And I think about this every time I'm in shul and people are talking. How can we not stand up? How can we not say something? On the day that we are mourning the Churban Beis HaMikdash, it's time for us to think about what our Mikdash looks like here in Chutz La'aretz and what the Mikdash Ma'at, how do we treat it? How do we sit in the shul and other people are watching us? Watch others who are talking and none of us say anything. That's what the Gemara says. If you sit there and you are idle and you say nothing about the injustice that's being done, Shma Minah Kanichalu, it's clear that you are partially responsible and that it doesn't bother you. And that's something that should bother all of us. So the Gemara says that because of that he was upset. He says, look, if somebody wanted to be angry at me, if somebody wanted to say something and throw me out of a party is one thing, but nobody in the room is willing to stick up. It must be there's something wrong with all of them. And therefore he says, I'm going to go take revenge. Ezel, Echel Behu Kurtza, I'm going to tell Lashon Hara Bei Malka to the king. And that will be my revenge to all those people who are responsible for my humiliation. Azal, he leaves. Amarle the Caesar, he goes to the Caesar and he says, Mardu Bach Yehudai, the Jews have rebelled against you. Amarle, the Caesar says, Mi Yemar, what do you mean they were upstanding citizens? I never knew about anything that should be problematic with them. Amarle, he says, let's give a test. Let's see if they really respect you. What's the test going to be? Shadr Lahur Kurbana. What you should do is, you should send a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash and I will be the one to bring it on your behalf. And let's see if they're actually going to offer the carbon that you send. As we know, the Beis HaMikdash is Beisi Beis Tfilah Yikari L'chol Ha'amim. We give equal opportunity to everyone. But here the question was, he played a little bit of a trick. What was the problem? What was the trick? So the Caesar gives him an animal. Azel Shadr Biyadi Igla Tilsa. He goes and he gives him a Igla Tilsa, which means a fat calf. He gives him a calf. So some of Farshim say on the Gemara, why did he give him a calf specifically? Why is that important detail? He should have just said he sent the carbon. So the Gemara says there's some remez here to the fact that the Gemara says that all bad things in the world come because of the Chetah Egel. Everything comes back in some way to the Chetah Egel. That's what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. And therefore the Gemara here says also, the Churban Beis HaMikdash also in some way stemmed back to the Chetah Egel. And that was the remez here by the Egel that was sent as the carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. So this Bar Kamsa is the one who's bringing the carbon, the calf of this Caesar, to the Beis HaMikdash. Bahadi de Kaasi, as he's traveling on the road, Shadda Be Muma, he does something which is very small, very insignificant to most people's eyes, but to the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, it's something that would absolutely invalidate a carbon. What does he do? He makes a little mum, he makes a little blemish in the nivs of Hasaim, somewhere in the lip, somewhere where only a Kohen would notice. Nobody else would see anything wrong with that, but that would already invalidate the carbon. And some say that he made it Bedukin Sheba'ayin. So I once saw the Pnei Menachem writes that maybe the remez here is the fact that the Gemara says either he made it in the nivs of Hasaim in the lips, or he made it in the Dukin Sheba'ayin, somewhere in the eye. He says that this was a kapara for the Jewish people who spoke Lashon Hara with their mouths, and perhaps they had Sarasayin, they look at each other. My father always likes to say that when we say, Havidanas kal adam lekafskhus, my father always likes to say that that's a bidiyevet. Lechatchila, you shouldn't be looking at other people at all. Once you're looking at them and you're trying to look at the things that they're doing, so then you should be down lekafskhus. But you shouldn't be looking at all. That's the first step. So that's what the Pnei Menachem writes, that's what the Gemara is trying to be merames to us over here as well, that there was a mum that was made in the nivs of Hasaim because there was something lacking in the sifasayim of the Jewish people at the time. They were speaking Lashon Hara about each other. And number two, Bedukin Sheba'ayin, there was something wrong with the way we looked at each other. There was something wrong with the way we evaluated the actions of one another. And because of that, perhaps that was a contributing factor to the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Why did he choose to make these small blemishes either in the eye or in the lips? Because that was a duchta, that was a place, Dilididan Havi Muma, we're on the last skinny line, first wide line. That was a place to Lididan Havi Muma, where according to Jewish law, that would be considered a mum and that would invalidate a karban. Ulididu, but according to any other person who would look at the animal, Lav Mumahu, that would not be considered something significant, that would not be a problem at all. Savar Rabbanan, so now the Rabbanim that are in the Beis HaMikdash are faced with a major problem. On the one hand, the Caesar has sent a karban. The Caesar is going to be angry if we don't offer his karban in the Beis HaMikdash. On the other hand, the karban has a mum. How can we bring the karban? But how are we going to explain it to the Caesar? If we tell him it was missing an arm, missing a leg, he's going to understand. If we tell him there was a little hole in the lip, a little hole in the eye, what do you think? He's really going to accept that? He's going to know that the reason we didn't do it is because we don't like him. So that was the major problem they were faced with. Says the Gemara, Savar Rabbanan Lekruve. The Chachamim thought that maybe we should offer this karban. Why? Even though it has a mum, and we're not allowed to offer a karban that has a mum, but maybe we should, Mishum Shalom Malchus, because we're concerned that the melech, the kingdom, is going to get angry at us, and then maybe that's going to lead to very negative consequences, and therefore, maybe it's better to violate this isser of being makrev balmum on the Mizbeach, because that will save us from something far worse. Now, the Magen Avraham says from here, it would seem to be an indication from the Gemara that one would be allowed to even violate an iser d'oraisa when you have something which is going to be threatening the shalom of the malchus. So take, for example, a very relevant case that we spoke about 2 weeks ago in shul, for those who were there. We spoke about pikuach nefesh for a non-Jew on Shabbos. So officially, the Gemara seems to say in Maseches Yuma, you're not allowed to violate anything when you have a situation of pikuach nefesh that doesn't involve a suffix pikuach nefesh for a Jew. So the Gemara there gives the case that you're not allowed to be, if you see there's an avalanche that falls down, and you don't know exactly who was in the house, who wasn't, but you want to go and rescue whoever is there. So the Gemara says, if there's some slight probability that maybe there's a Jew in there, you don't even know if the Jew is alive, but maybe there's a slight chance that he is alive, you're allowed to move away all the rubble, you're allowed to do whatever has to be done in order to save that Jewish life. So the Acharonim say, you see clearly from that Gemara, and this is a clear indication from the way the Gemara sets up the case, that if there was, with absolute certainty, no Jew that was stuck under the rubble, you certainly would not be allowed to do that. Why? Why wouldn't you be allowed to do that? Because you're not allowed to be Mechal HaShabbos for the sake of saving the life of a non-Jew. And yet, we find that there is a heter Mishum Shalom Malchus. We see that today we're allowed to do that because what would be the alternative? What would happen if we wouldn't save the life of the non-Jew when we see a car accident right out on Peninsula Boulevard on Shabbos and nobody's going to go out to save the person when it's in our reach to do that? Says the Magen Avraham, you see from this Gemara again, the first wide line on Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph, you see from here that one perhaps would be allowed to violate even an Issa D'Oraisa, even a biblical prohibition where you have a consideration of Shalom Malchus. Says the Gemara, so we're faced with a major problem. What do we do? On the one hand, if we go ahead and we offer this karban, we're bringing something which you're not allowed to bring. You're violating an issa d'oraisa. If you don't bring the karban, then the Caesar is going to get angry. Amar lehu Rabbi Zachari ben Avkulis. Rabbi Zachari ben Avkulis stands up and he says, Yomer bali muvin kremi the gambi emezbeach. People who are watching are going to say, they're going to draw the wrong conclusion. They're going to say, look, we don't care about the laws of mum anymore by a karban. And therefore, they're going to say in the future they're allowed to do the same thing. So he says, that's not acceptable. We cannot offer the karban on the mezbeach. Sarva lemiktele. They say, oh, maybe we have an option number three. Option number one is offer the carbon that has the mum on the mizbeach because we're afraid of the melech. Option number two is don't offer it and then maybe all of us are going to get killed. Oh, option number three is kill the messenger. Kill Bar Kamsa, and this way the message will never get back to the Caesar that his carbon was not offered. Says the Gemara, Sarva Lemikdale, they wanted to kill Bar Kamsa de Lolez of Olema, that this way Bar Kamsa will not go back and give the bad news back to the Caesar. Amar Lahu, Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkula stands up and he says, we can't do that either. Why? Because Yomru, people are going to say, Matul Mum Mekachim Yehari. People are going to draw the wrong conclusion again. They're going to say, if somebody goes ahead and makes a mum intentionally in a carbon, they are punished with death. And that, in fact, is not the case. The Torah never says you get the death penalty for doing something like that. And therefore, Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkula decided that this was not a good option either. Therefore, what they decided to do was, they're not going to offer the carbon, and as a result of that, Bar Kamsa goes back to the Caesar. Bar Kamsa gives the bad news that the Jews don't like him, and you'll see they don't like you because after all they got rid of your carbon, they wouldn't offer it. And then, a terrible thing came out as a result. Amar Rabbi Yochanan says, An besanuso sher Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulas. Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulas didn't have the ability to stand up. Sometimes a leader has to take a stand. The leader has to say things that are, unfortunately, uncomfortable. Yes, you might not be beloved, and yes, not everybody's always going to accept what you say, but sometimes the job of a leader is to stand up, and because Zachariah ben Avkulas was not able to stand up and make a proper determination and to evaluate the situation properly, Hechriva es Beisenu, he is responsible for the Churban Beis HaMikdash, V'sarfa es Hechaleinu V'Higliseinu Me'artseinu. And you see from here that sometimes anava, sometimes too much humility is able to be makalkal. It's able to destroy a person. That's where Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz writes as well. The Nefesh HaChaim has it as well in Shar Beis when he talks about the perspective of a Jewish person whenever they do a mitzvah. He says it's very nice to be an anav, but sometimes a person's aniva, sometimes a person's humility leads them to say, what, does the Ribbono Shel Olam really care if I say Kriya Shema tonight? Does he really care if I go Daven Ma'ariv tonight? Does he care if I put on tefillin tomorrow? Okay, there's a million other Jews doing all that. He doesn't really care about me. He says the Nefesh HaChaim, sometimes your own anivas can be to your own detriment. That's not the right perspective. The Ribbono Shel Olam loves you so much. He wants each of our mitzvahs in particular. And he pointed to us and he said, you're the only one who's going to put on tefillin today that's going to make me proud. And you're the only one who's going to say Kriya Shema tonight with Kavana. And that's what's going to make me happy. And therefore we see over here as well, sometimes too much aniva, sometimes a person who doesn't realize the power vested in them individually is something that is incredibly beloved in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's not something to ever underestimate. People can't see, people can't hear. Okay, says the Gemara. The Gemara continues, five lines up from the wide line. Shadar ilavayu, the Nero and Kesar. I wanted to sit in a place where I wouldn't see everyone leaving. So the Gemara says that the Caesar is very upset that people are... The Caesar is very upset that people, that they did not offer his carbon. So now he sends one of his officials, one of his officers, to go and destroy Yerushalayim. Kika Asu, when Nero and Kesar is coming, Shadar Gir LeMizrach, as he's traveling to Yerushalayim, he throws up an arrow toward the Mizrach, Asanaf of Yerushalayim. It fell toward Yerushalayim. LeMayrav, he goes and he throws an arrow again toward the west, Asanath of Yerushalayim. Once again, the arrow falls in the direction of Yerushalayim. La'abaruchas Hashemayim. He goes ahead and he throws an arrow to all different sides. Asanath of Yerushalayim. All of them are falling toward Yerushalayim. Amarle the Yanuka. He happens to pass by a child and he says to him, Sok li psukecha. Tell me, I see that you're learning a Tanakh. Tell me, which pasuk are you learning? This used to be something the Gemara has in general. Every once in a while, when somebody wasn't sure about what to do, they would pass by the first child they saw and they would ask them, what are you learning? Whatever pasuk the kid pointed to, they would assume, had some connection to whatever question they had, and that was the way they determined the question. Nowadays, there are those who think that if you take, you know, there are Lubavitcher Hasidim who believe, if you take the Lubavitcher Rebbe Zigrus and you stick a question in there and you open it up to whatever letter it is, right, so that will give you the answer. That's what some people believe. I remember my parents once had a neighbor, you're not allowed to tell jokes on Tisha B'Av, but it's pretty humorous. So my parents once had a neighbor that was a Lubavitcher Chassid, and unfortunately they were up in the mountains and they didn't have their Rebbe's Igros. So they didn't have the ability to put in the question that they had into the Igros. So they decided to take out the cookbook, and they thought it's going to have the same magical powers as if you stick a note into the Igros and into the... If you try to have a simon from Tanakh, you're going to have the same simon from the cookbook as well. That is obviously something that we don't allow. Something that is, like my father says from Soloveitchik, some things are usher in Judaism because they're just stupid. So that's one of those examples. So here, that's what he does. He turns to this little child and he asks him, what are you learning? What part of Tanakh? Amarle, he says, oh, the pasuk I'm up to is V'nasati es nikmasi ve'edom. I'm going to take revenge against Edom v'yad Ami Yisrael. I'm going to take against revenge against Edom because they destroy the Jewish people. Amar, he says to himself, God wants to go ahead and destroy the Jewish people's base on Migdash. He wants to go and blame it on me? I'm not getting involved. If God wants to destroy his base on Migdash, let him destroy it himself. It's not my problem. I don't want him taking revenge on me. Let him find someone else to do it. Aruk, he runs away. He says, yes, I was sent by the Caesar to do this job, but it's not for me. I don't want to get involved. But Uzzah, the Igar, he becomes a convert. Amazing story. Not only does he become a convert, but nothing can run there. He has a descendant that comes out from him, who is one of the most preeminent Tanaim, that was Rav Meir.
But why, with our council, why instead of, if he had any credibility to the Caesar, why didn't the Rabbanim send a delegation of, a high-end delegation of Rabbanim, saying, this is what he's trying to do, he's trying to create trouble. We wanted to shift your carbon, but he made a mull in it. And and that would be comforting to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why did they try?
I think it's a good question, but the problem that the Gemara was facing here, the problem that the people at the time, the Gedolim of the time were facing, was that it was the kind of mum that would mean nothing to the Caesar.
But
an explanation like that is bogus. He's not going
to
buy it. But if it was missing an arm, missing a leg, okay, so I understand.
They tried to defend it. In other words, here, they were set up without defending himself and explaining.
Yeah. Interesting question. So now the Gemara says, Shadri Levi lost the sinus case here. So the Caesar tried to send Neron. That didn't work. Because Neron ultimately became a convert and ultimately has Rav Meir. Now, Shadri Levi lost the sinus case here. So now they send Vespasian to go be the one in charge of destroying the Beis HaMikdash. Asad Tsar Alev Flashni. So Vespasian decides he's going to make a siege on Yerushalayim for 3 years. Habiba, there were in Yerushalayim. Hanatulasa Asiri, there were three very rich personalities in Yerushalayim, very wealthy people. One of them was Nakdiman Ben Gurion, one of them was Ben Kalba Savua, and the third one was Ben Tzitzis Hakesis. Says the Gemara, those seem to be very strange names. Why do we call them those three strange names? Number one, Nakdiman Ben Gurion. His name is Nakdiman Ben Gurion Shenakdalo Chama Ba'avura, because the Gemara says in Tainus Daf Yutes that there was once a time where he borrowed money from someone and he said he was going to pay back by a certain date. He didn't have the money by that date, and the sun remained out for him. The sun didn't set that night because we had such great respect for Nakdiman Ben Gurion. We had to make sure that he was able to pay back on time. So the Gemara says that's a pretty amazing person. He went down in history as the person who the sun stood up for. Number two, the second wealthy person's name was Ben Kalba Savua. What does it mean? Shekal nichnas the beiso kishu roiv kekelev, anyone who entered his home when he was hungry like a dog, yotze kishu savea, was able to leave the home when he was full. So that's the kind of magnanimous personality we're dealing with, that he was always willing to give himself to other people. Number three, why was his name Ben Tzitzis Hakeses? Says the Gemara Shaisa Tzitziso Negreros al Gabi Kistos, because his tzitzis used to drag on top of the kistos, which means on top of the fancy chairs. What does that mean, on top of the chairs? Ikedi Amri, some say Shaisa Kisto Mutelos Ben Gedoli Rami. He had a fancy chair because he was in the parliament. V'chad Amar, and some say that, I'm sorry, Ikedi Amri Shaisa Kisto Mutelos Ben Gedoli Rami. Some say that he had a chair, he was part of the parliament. So the Beis Yosef writes in Arachayim and Ilchos Tzitzis, what if a person has, not like today where we just wear a beged of tzitzis. It used to be people would wear robes, and you had to put tzitzis on a robe. So the Gemara says, obviously that's chayv in tzitzis if it has dalet kamfos. The problem that the Beis Yosef raises is, what about the fact that it's going to be dragging on the floor? That's a bizayin on mitzvah. So how am I going to wear tzitzis on a beged that's down to the ground, but yet it has tzitzis on it? So the Beis Yosef says, well, what do you do about it? Because over here the Gemara seems to say that he had tzitzis that were dragging on the floor. That's what the Gemara tells us. Every time he would walk around, the tzitzis would drag behind him. So that's why he was called Ben Tzitzis Hakeses. So the Beis Yosef discusses it, but that he says in Siman Chaf Aleph that we should be careful that our tzitzis do not drag on the floor. It's something we have to be concerned about, because that would be a bizayin on tzitzis. So over here, some Acharonim want to say the reason why it was mutter for him to have the tzitzis dragging is because not like he walked on the dirty floors that all of us walk on. He was walking in the fancy halls of Congress, and he was the one who was walking on. His tzitzis never got ruined from that, and therefore there was no reason to be concerned. He had the red carpet in front of him, so he didn't have to worry about it. His tzitzis never got ruined. But for the rest of us that don't have that, we have to worry about that consideration. Says the Gemara further, so these three wealthy individuals are now living in Yerushalayim. Problem is that Vespasian has just come and lay a siege on Yerushalayim. Chadamer, so one of these three wealthy people says, nothing to worry about, the siege is not a problem. I am so wealthy, I have enough in my storage house, wheat and barley and everything else. I'm going to provide all the wheat and the barley for the entire Jewish community in Yerushalayim, and we're going to totally ignore this siege. Bechadamer one says, Bechadamer, Bechadamilcha, Bechadamashcha. The second wealthy person says, I have enough in my storage house, enough wine, enough salt, enough oil to sustain the Jewish community in Yerushalayim, nothing to be concerned about. And the third one says, Bitzivi, I have enough wood in my storage homes that I can provide wood for the entire community for the duration of the siege. The Gemara says that the Chachamim said that the one who was most praiseworthy was the one who gave the wood. Why? Because wood is the most expensive and wood is the most essential. With wood you're able to cook food, with wood you're able to do other things, and therefore the Gemara assumes the one who contributed all of that wood was the one who was most praiseworthy of these three wealthy individuals. I remember my father's first sefer, there's a haskama in there from Rabbi Pinchas Hirschsprung, who was a abbezin in Montreal, a tremendous Talmud Chacham. So he wrote in there, part of his haskama was, Shalchu Rabbanu L'Tzvi. He was talking about my father's name is Tzvi. He said, the Chacham said the greatest of them all is Tzvi. So he was, you see his amazing bekiyas and shas, that he pulled one little line out of a gemara that has nothing to do with anything, and he applied it to that, but it was a beautiful line that he wrote. So why did they praise him? They said because the Rav Chisda Palat Lidi Havi Masa B'Shamir, Rav Chisda used to give all the keys of all of his storage homes to his helpers in the house. Barmi Ditzidi, except for the keys to the storage home which held the wood. Why? Because the wood storage house is so important and so expensive, we don't just give the keys away to anybody. Gamer Rav Chisda Akal B'Dachiti, for every one storage house that you have of wheat, V'Yishitin Akal B'Ditzidi, you need 60 storage homes of wood, and therefore we assume that the one who contributed the wood was the one who was most praiseworthy. So these three people step up and they say, we're able to take care of everybody, no one should worry, everything's going to be fine. Havalu lemezon eser mechad shata, they were so wealthy that they had enough to sustain the people for 21 years. Had they been in siege for 21 years, it would have been fine. However, the problem was, hava behu hani bar yoni, there were a bunch of zealots who were there. And they said, Amr Lahu, Rabbanan Nefuk Veneved Shalom Bahadayu. The Chachamim in Yerushalayim said, look, we're not going to be able to fight against the Caesar. It's not going to happen. We're not going to be able to stay here for 21 years. It's just not going to work. So something's going to go wrong. So the Chachamim wanted to go and negotiate a deal. Whatever it was, they're going to make a deal. But these zealots decided, no, we're going to fight till the end. We're going to fight. Lo Shav Kidr, so they wouldn't let the Chachamim in Yerushalayim go and negotiate with the enemy. Amr Lahu, Nepuk Veneved Kerva Bahadayu. They said, no, we're going to go out and make a war. Amr Lahu Rabbanan, the Chacham said back to him, Lamastaya Milsa, you don't have an army that's strong enough to fight against the Caesar's army. And therefore, this whole inner battle of the Jewish people was going on inside of Yerushalayim about how exactly to deal with the enemy. And as a result, all of this group of wild people, Kamu, Kalinu, Lahani, Amri, Dechiti, Vesari, Vahavi Kafna. They went ahead and burnt down the storage homes that were holding all of this grain, all the oil, all the everything else. And now it turns out there was a famine because nobody had anything to eat. Everything was burned by the Jews themselves. At that time, Marsavas Vaisus was one of the very wealthy people in Yerushalayim as well. Asirasa de Yerushalayim Havay. She was a wealthy woman living in Yerushalayim. Shadrasa de Shlucha, so when all this was going on, she realizes, I better start stocking up. Everything was just burnt down, so you got to go quickly to the supermarket, buy whatever you can. She sends out her servant, the Amrle, and she tells him, Zil ICD Smida, I want you to go out and buy fine flour for me. Now, he wasn't the sharpest servant, so he has an instruction, he should buy fine flour. He goes to the supermarket, he sees out the Azal is davening. By the time he got there, there's no fine flour left. Why? Because there was a mad rush. Everybody was trying to buy whatever they could, so there's no fine flour left. Asa Amrle, so he comes back and he says, Smida leka chiyurta iki. I'm sorry, he says, did I just skip a line? No. Yeah. Smida leka chiyurta iki. He says, there's no fine flour, there's a different kind of flour. Amrle, she says, run quickly. Zil Isidi, go get it. Adazil is down, and by the time he goes there, that was sold out also. Asaba Amrle chiyurta leka gushkareika. There's coarse bread still in the market that's available. So she says, go quickly and get it. Asaba Amrle gushkare leka kimcha the sarika. There's barley flour left. By the time he got there, everything was gone. Adazel is davening, and therefore she decides, you know what? My servant over here is a fool. He doesn't understand. He should take whatever's there. Let me go get it by myself, even though I've never gone shopping on my own. But now it's time. Look, there's going to be a famine. I better go buy whatever I can. have a shlifa masani. She was putting on her shoes. Amra, she says, I'm going to go out into the public supermarket and see if I can buy anything that I can eat. Asil la parsa, while she was walking outside, she got some excrement stuck on the bottom of her shoe, umesa, and she died from that. She was a mufunekas. And when she had one little thing that got dirty, she couldn't handle it. Kara la Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. On her, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, Haraka b'chava anuga asher lo nitsa kafragla. That's the pasuk in Sefer Tvarim. That's what it's referring to. There was some person who was such an anuga, who was so sensitive to something that was repulsive to them, that they lost their life as a result. Ikadami, some say it's not that she stepped on the excrement of an animal, but rather grogris derab tzedek achlav is teniso mesa. She ate, she found, she's walking around the streets again, she's looking for something to eat. First thing she finds is some dried out figs. She takes a bite out of them, but she was so nauseated by the taste of this fig that she died. What happened? What are these figs all about? The Rav Tzadok, there was a great tzaddik, Rav Tzadok, Yasev Arba and Shnin Mitanisa. Rav Tzadok fasted 40 years. Why did he fast 40 years? The Lolichar of Yerushalayim. He fasted 40 years that Yerushalayim should not be destroyed. I'm always amazed when I see this Gemara. We have a hard time fasting one day for Churban Yerushalayim. If I tell you how many shilas I got today about everybody's looking for loopholes. Some guy's going to be in court tomorrow. He wants to know, can he wear his leather shoes? I wrote to him, why can't he wear other shoes that are synthetic? He says, it's not going to look good. I'm not going to win the case. Really? So you're willing to give up Churban Yerushalayim. You're willing to give up your leather shoes. That's even that, we can't even take the one thing, the one restriction that we can hold on to, where we're going to work on Tisha B'Av, which we shouldn't be doing anyway. But we're going to work, and we can't even hold back from that one thing. It's amazing. But here we have Rav Tzadok, who sits 40 years in tainus on Yerushalayim, that he shouldn't have the opportunity to see Yerushalayim be destroyed. Ki avi achol midi, when he would eat something at night, in between his fasting, having mischazi me'avro, you were able to see it from outside, it went down his pipe, you were able to see it. Vichi avi bariya, when he got better after the 40 years of his fasting, they were trying to rehabilitate him. Maisi de grogo, so we know, unfortunately from the scenes of the Holocaust, we know, after the people were so emaciated and they were starved for so many years, you can't just go and give them food. Their stomachs cannot handle it. Their system can't handle it after all those years of starvation. And therefore, you have to do it in a progression. And that was the same thing over here. When they wanted to rehabilitate Rav Tzadok for the terrible illness that his body was pained with as a result of all of his fasting, so they did it slowly, slowly. What do? They brought him figs. Mayitz miyahu, he would suck out the juice. Vishadilu, and then he would throw away. He wasn't able to handle the fig itself. He would just suck out the juice, and that was the only thing he could eat. So now, she's walking down the street. She happens to chance upon a fig. She didn't realize it was a fig from this Rav Tzadok, and all the sweetness was sucked out of it. She takes a bite out of it, and she died from that experience. As she was losing her life, she took all of her gold and her silver, she throws that out into the street, and she says, hi, Omaimi Boili, what does this money do for me? Which is a question we should all ask. In the end of the day, what does this money do for me? We ever see sick children, we see people who are going through illness. What does all the money in the world mean to them? Nothing. Nothing. If you don't have health, if you don't have life, what is all this meaningful for? Nothing. And that's what she says. I could be the wealthiest woman in Yerushalayim. If I'm not able to live, if I'm not able to have any enjoyment in life, what is all this money worth to me? Behind the tzivin, that's what it means in the pasuk in Yecheskel, kaspam b'chutzos yashlichu. People were throwing their money out in the streets because it's just not worth it to them. At a time when there's so much destruction, when there's so much pain in the world, money means absolutely nothing. Aber Sikra, now back to the story, says the Gemara, we have this group of bandits in Yerushalayim that wouldn't allow the Chachamim to go and make peace with the enemy. What happened? They went ahead, and they went so far as to burn down the storage homes that were made to sustain the entire Jewish people. So now we got a problem. Abba Sikra raised very young in Yerushalayim. Abba Sikra is the head of this group of bandits in Yerushalayim. But he also happened to be Bar Achde de Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Abba. He also happened to be the nephew of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, which is interesting. You know, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had a nephew who was a troublemaker. Shalach Lei, so he sends him a letter. Ta Bitsina Lagaboy. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sends a letter to his nephew. He says, look, you're debilitating the entire Jewish community. You're going to destroy all of us. Sends him a letter. He says, can you come meet with me privately? Let's discuss this. Also, he comes to him and he says, Amarle, Ad Amos Avitu Hachi Bekatnisi Leila Amma Bekafna. How long are you going to hang in here and stand by your word that you're going to fight against the enemy? You're going to destroy the entire Jewish people. Amalei, he says to him, my yevid, what do you want me to do? Yamina lehumidi, if I say something to my followers, katluli, they'll kill me. Amalei, he says, chazali takanta lediti, te'epuk. So he says, look, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I respect that, the fact that all of your followers, if they find that you're betraying them, they're going to kill you. But at least figure out a way for me that I can get out of town, that I can go outside of the walls of Yerushalayim and negotiate with the enemy. It doesn't have to be you, let it be me. Efshadabi Atzolapurta, maybe I'll be successful in saving the Jewish people. Amalei, he says, I got a great idea. Nekod nafshecha bekitsiri. You should go ahead and you should make pretend that you're sick. And make pretend that you're deathly sick. Lasi kuliyama v'lishaylubach. And everybody's going to come and visit you to see how you're feeling. V'aisi midi saria. We're going to take something rotten, something spoiled. V'agni gavach. We're going to put it on top of your body in order that people will think you actually died. And that's the stench. That's the smell of the body. V'lemer. We're going to tell everybody to naf napshech. We're going to tell everyone Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai died. That's it. Nothing to come visit him anymore. V'aylubach. Talmidach, and we're going to carry you out on a bed. We're going to tell everybody you died. We're going to carry you out by your Talmidim. V'lo la'ayil bach inesh achrina. We shouldn't have anyone else carrying your body. T'lo lir gesham bach t'kalalat. And nobody should feel that you are lighter, because as we know, it's a lighter thing to carry when one is alive than when they're no longer alive. And therefore he says, if we're going to allow other people to be in on the secret, then it's not going to work. The plan is not going to work. We know that somebody who's alive is much lighter than somebody who is no longer alive. So the Magen Avraham in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses writes a fascinating shaila. He says, you have somebody who passes away, and the Chevra Kadisha wants to bury them, which is what the Chevra Kadisha always wants to do. Problem is, this person has many, many Talmidim. So let's say the Godel Hador passes away, and the regular Chevra Kadisha in Yerushalayim says, we're the ones who always do the Tahara, we're the ones who always do the Kfur, we want to do it here also. Happens to be, everybody's fighting over the opportunity to be involved in the mitzvah because it's the Gadol HaDor. Everybody wants to do it. So the Talmidim of that person come and say, look, normally we're not part of the Chevra Kadisha, but this time we want to be given the opportunity to be involved in the mitzvah. Who is right, says the Magen Avraham? Who has the chance to do the Kvura? Who has the chance to be involved in the Tahara? Is it the normal Chevra Kadisha because they're always the ones who are designated? Or do we say in this case, it's only the Talmidim? Says the Magen Avraham, perhaps, he says, you can bring a raya from here that the Talmidim are the ones who have first rights. Because you see here, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai passed away, his Talmidim were the first ones who had the rights to bury him. Now, it's not an exact parallel, because here, we had a major concern. If the Talmidim were not going to be the ones to do it, and we're going to have the regular people do it, then maybe the secret will be given away. So the Magen Avraham's whole proof from this Gemara is a little bit questionable, it's a little bit shaky, but he draws some kind of parallel from our Gemara to that case. It's a fascinating Tosus in Ksubas, where Tosus writes, there was one of the Baliyat Tosus was by the name of Reb Chaim HaKoin. He was a Kohen, and he says, had I been there when Rabbeinu Tam passed away, I would have gone and been metami myself to go and bury him. Why would you have done that? So the Acharonim say, why would you have done that? You're a Kohen. There are plenty of other people who could have buried him. So there seems to be some indication, the Acharonim say, that a Talmud has first dibs. And even if you're a Kohen, it's considered like a Meis Mitzvah to you. So maybe you have the opportunity to go and be involved in the Tahara, be involved in the Kvura, because you are the Talmud Muvak of Rabbeinu Tam, and therefore you have the right to even defy your kahuna. Anyway, it's a question in halacha, but it's interesting that much of the discussion comes from here. So the Gemara says, Abed Hachi, this is what they did. Nichnas bar Rebelezer mitzad echad, we're on the first wide line, bottom of the page. Rebelezer picks up the casket on one side, Rabbi Shua mitzad acher. Rabbi Shua, his great Talmud, picks it up from the other side. Kimatu lepischa, when they come to the entrance of the city of Yerushalayim, and here's the obstacle. What's the obstacle? Because you have all these bandits that are blocking all of the entrance ways to Yerushalayim. Now they come with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's body, and Bo Lemitkra, they wanted to stab the casket in order to see, is there really a dead person? They thought maybe this is a ploy here. Amar Lehu, so Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Lazar say back to them, Yomer Rabban Dakru, how can you stab the casket? People are going to say that our great tzaddik, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, was stabbed. That's going to look terrible for the Jewish people. Bo leminchafei. So they said, look, you're right, maybe we won't stab the casket, but we'll shake it around a little bit. And we'll see. If there's someone alive in there, they won't be able to survive our shaking around. So, Amar Lehu, Yomer Rabban Nachman. What do you think? When the casket is going to have banged around, you think they're not going to see? We can't do that. They're going to say the great Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's casket was banged around, and that's going to be an embarrassment to the Jewish people. Paschulei, Bava, so I said, you know what? You're right. We're going to trust you on this one. We're going to let you out of the city. So here the plan worked. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai jumps out of the casket right after he comes out of Yerushalayim, pops out, and runs to the negotiating table with Vespasian. If you don't remember, Vespasian is the one who was holding the siege all around Yerushalayim. This got to a point where it was impossible to survive anymore. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had to come up with a way of how he was going to get out to negotiate with Vespasian. Finally, he gets himself out, and he says to him, Shalma alecha malka, shalma alecha malka. He says, Shalom aleichem to the king. Amalei, so Vespasian says back to him, Mechayvis trei ketala, you are chayiv misa, you are deserving of the death penalty for two reasons. Number one, chada delav malkana. Number one, I'm not the king. I'm only the messenger of the king. I'm the one who was put in charge of this project. I'm a general in the army. I'm not the one in charge. I'm not the president of the country. So how do you call me a king? You're a mode bar malchus. You're being disrespectful to the king himself if you call me the king. So that's reason number one why you deserve death. Number two, he says, Visu imalka ana, if I really am the king, if you sincerely believe that I'm the king, and therefore you're coming to negotiate with me, ad ha'idna amaylo asas legabai, why do you wait so long to come and negotiate with me? If you believe I really have the power to save you, you should have come a long time ago. So Rav Levi Yitzchak Raditchever used to say from this Gemara, when it comes to Yom Naron, which is shortly coming upon us, so he said every time they came to the word HaMelech, when they started off the Shachris, when they came to the word HaMelech, he would start to cry. Why was he crying? What's the big deal? What's so special about HaMelech? He said, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to say the same thing to us. You call out and you say, HaMelech, we believe that you're the king. The Ribbono Shel Olam is going to say, yeah, you really believe I'm the king? So why do you wait so long? Where were you all year? If you believe I have the ability to make a decision and to change your life and to make it better, so then what happened? All of a sudden you wake up now, Rosh Hashanah? Where were you all year long? And that really, says the Barditchever, is what this Gemara comes to teach us. Sometimes a melech, sometimes the person in charge, is going to have, unfortunately, a tie on all of us and say, if you believe, if you really recognize that I'm the one who's in charge and I have the ability to make a difference in your life, then how can you wait until Rosh Hashanah to come along and put yourself out before me? So now Vespasian is having this discussion with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says back to him, Amar lei dika amri lab malkana. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, number one, you say that you're not the king. He says, Ivra, we're turning the page now, we're on Nun Vav Amud Beis, top line, Ivra malkaat. He says, you don't know the secret. You are the king. What do you mean you're the king? I'm not the king. He says, Ti lav malkaat. I just want you to know, he says, if you were not the king, lo mimsira yushalayim biyadecha. The Ribbono Shel Olam, God, would never allow for Yerushalayim to be given over in your hands. If Yerushalayim is going to go down, it's going to go down by somebody who's at least respectable. We're not going to let Yerushalayim go down just to a nobody, just to a general of an army. No, we're going to give over Yerushalayim. If it has to be destroyed already, it's going to be Bederech Kavod. And therefore, says the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew, if Vespasian is the one who's being trusted with the destruction of Yerushalayim, it must be, he is the king. Diksiv, because it says, V'alavadon ba'adir yipol, the Navi Yeshaya tells us that Levanon, which means Yerushalayim, is going to fall in the hand of a mighty. V'ein adir el ha-melech, diksiv, v'haya adir mimenu. V'ein Levanon el ha-beis ha-migdash. Beis ha-migdash is going to be destroyed by somebody powerful. Shenemar ha-har ha-tov ha-zev ha-levanon. That's number one. He says, you are the king, because otherwise God would never allow Yerushalayim to be in your hands. Number two, he says, Udaka'amrin, and if you say, Imalka'ana amaylo kasis legabay ad ha'idna, you ask, how come I didn't come until now? If you really believe I'm the king, how come you waited so long? He says, we had an internal issue. The Jewish community in Yerushalayim had an internal problem, the same way we do. The Isban lo shavkinan, so many Jewish communities have their own problems. You don't have enough energy to go fight with the enemy because you're busy fighting with yourselves. And here, says the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, what do you want me to do? I couldn't get out to negotiate with you because I was busy negotiating with our own people. I couldn't get past that. So he says to him, Amarlei, he says, you're a fool. Ilu chavish al dvash v'darkon karach aleha, if you had a chavish al dvash, which means you had a big jug full of something sweet, full of honey, v'darkon karach aleha, and you had a snake that was wrapping itself around this bucket of honey, would you not have broken up the vessel in order to get rid of the snake? Meaning the snake can only be here because it's wrapped around the vessel. If you smash the vessel, the snake is gone. So he says, so too, you could have broken down the walls of Yerushalayim, and then he could have come out to us. He didn't have to go through the main entrances. He could have just broken down the wall somewhere else. Then it would have been no problem. So, Ishtik, he says, I don't know, you got me. Kari Olei Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef responded and he says, V'tem Rabbi Kiva, Meshiv Chacham Imacha V'daitem Yisachel. Now the Yeshaya tells us every once in a while, the Ribbono Shalom doesn't give you the opportunity. You might be a great Chacham, a great Talmud Chacham, you might be Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, you might be the leader of the community, but sometimes the Ribbono Shalom does not give you the ability to know what to say, or to answer adequately, to say the right thing. I think about this every night when I daven Ma'ariv. There's no more part of Ma'ariv than I have Kavanah at, than the words that we say that V'sakneinu be'etz ha'tova milfanecha. I think as somebody who's a community leader, or at least people consider you a community leader, and you're asked for opinions on all kinds of things, how are you supposed to know what to say? That's the most, to me, it's the most profound tefillah. The Ribbono Shel Olam has to put the right words in your mouth, and that's exactly what troubled Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai here. He was faced in a situation, he didn't know what to say. Somehow the Ribbono Shel Olam put it into his mouth. That's what we daven for every night, that we should have the opportunity to have the seichel that the Ribbono Shel Olam should let us know what to say. Ibayle le meimar, what should he have said? Shaklinan tzavsa v'shaklina le d'darka mekalina le v'chavisa shaklina le. He said, he could have responded to them by saying, look, I was trying to break down the resistance of the Jewish community themselves in order to allow myself to get out without having to break down the wall of Yerushalayim. Okay, first middle wide lines of Nun Vav Amud Beis. Adahachi, as this was going on, Asi Pristika Alei Meromi, there was a message that comes in from Rome. Amar Leikum, the message says, get up immediately. Demisle Kesar, because the Caesar has passed away. Va'amri Hani Chashivi Diramai La'osi Beresha, and all the parliament of Rome has said that you're the one who's now going to be in charge. You, in fact, are the king. So Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai was correct. Havisayim Chad Masani, he was in the middle of putting on one of his shoes. By the Masayim Achriti, wanted to put on the other shoe. Lo Ayel, for some reason, it wasn't going on. By the Mishlefei the Idach, he says, look, I can't walk around with one shoe on, one shoe off, so he may as well take the one off that he already had on. Lo Nafik, he wasn't able to get it off. Amar, he turns to Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, he says, my hi, what's going on? How come my shoes aren't fitting me? Amalei, he says, Lo Titzdar, don't feel bad. Shmua Tova Asilach, you just got some good news. Dechsiv, as the Pasuk says in Sefer Mishlei, Shmua Tova Tadashi Netzem. When a person hears good news, you feel good about yourself. Not just you feel good emotionally, you feel good, you know, you feel a little fatter, a little heavier, because you're excited about what you just heard. And therefore he says, that's why your shoes don't fit you anymore, because you got the good news. Ella, Ella Mai, Takante, what should I do? How should I get my shoes on? How should I get my shoes off? What am I going to do? Leisei inish delo miyasva daitach. He says, bring someone here who you happen not to like. V'lichlif kamach, and let him stand before you. Dechsiv, v'ruach necha tiyavesh garim. The Pasuk says in Mishlei as well, when your spirit is down, your body will take a toll to that as well. And you see that happens to people. Unfortunately, when someone's depressed, they can be eating normally, but very often you have, unfortunately, the body reacts as well, and they lose so much weight just because of the emotional well-being that is lacking there. So that's what the Gemara tells us here. Avad Hachi, that's what he did. Ayil, and he was able to put on his other shoe. Amar Lei, he says to Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, Me'achar dechaf misa kuli hai, I see that you're such a wise person and you know the answers to everything. Ad ha'idna amaylo asisu l'gabai. If you're so smart, how come you waited so long to come and have a conversation with me about the situation in Yerushalayim? Amri Lei, he says, what are you doing? V'la Amri Lach, we already had this conversation. Amri Lei, anan Amri Amri Lach. Yeah, I asked you the question back. Why couldn't you figure out how to get around these bandits? Okay, so now we're going to leave that. Amri Lei, Mezel Azilna. Anyway, Vespasian says, sorry, got to go. I'm the one who's the king now. I'm the Caesar, newly appointed. I'm not going to pay attention to Yerushalayim anymore. I'm going to put someone else in charge of the problem here. V'ina Shachmina Meshadarna. Ela Bay Mine Midida Etein Lach. He says to Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, tell me something that you like, because I have a very fond memory of the discussion that we're having here. Amar Lei, he says, I want three things. Number one, he says, Tein li Yavneh b'chachameha. I want you to leave over the city of Yavneh and the Talmidei Chachamim who live there. Number two, he says, I want you to leave over Shushalisa d'Rabbi Gamliel. I want you to leave over the dynamic family of Rabbi Gamliel, who was a very important figure of the time. And number three, he says, Asvasa de Messiah le Rab Tzadik. We have a personality in our generation who's fasting 40 years that the Churban Beis HaMikdash should not take place. So I'd like you to send a doctor to rehabilitate Rab Tzadik. Kari le Rab Yosef. Rab Yosef said about him, V'item Rabbi Kiva, Meshiv Chacham Amalte Acha V'day to Misachal. I don't understand. What kind of answer is that? Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai has an audience with the Prime Minister. You're going to waste it on asking for a doctor for somebody who's sick? Why don't you go and ask him for something bigger? He barred the Mamerla, he should have said, Leshavkinu Chadazimna, leave us alone. Should have said, take away the siege, get all you soldiers out of here, and leave the Jewish people alone. But who's Sabah? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai thought, Dilma Kuli Hai Lo Avid, Vatzalapurta Nami Lo Avid. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was concerned, if I'm going to say that, and Vespasian is not going to accept it, maybe I'll walk away from this deal with absolutely nothing, so I may as well just ask for something that I think he's going to be able to fulfill. Asvasa the Messiah, the Rab Tzedek. So a doctor is sent to heal Rab Tzedek, who was the one fasting on the Churban Yerushalayim. Mayi, what did they do to him? Yumakama, the first day, Ashkiyuha Mayi de Pari. They fed him some water that had bran soaked in it. Lamachar, the next day, they feed him something else, Mayi de Sipuka. Lamachar, Mayi de Kimcha. Adaravach Mei Porta Porta. They kept feeding him a little bit more, until finally his body was back in a healthy state once again. So now Vespasian, as we said, becomes the king. So Vespasian says, I have no time for little things, little problems like Yerushalayim. I got to run the world. I have other things to do. So what does he do? He sends Titus. He sends a different general to be the one in charge of destroying Yerushalayim. Everyone should feel comfortable to leave whenever they feel they need to. It's nothing, no pressure to stay at all. Azel Shadre le Titus. So he sends Titus to be the one in charge of destroying Yerushalayim. Va'amar, and he says, Ei Eloheimu Tzurcha Soyubo. The Pasuk says in Devarim, and that's a reference to Titus HaRasha, Shachirev V'gidev Klapi Maile, that Titus was so disrespectful, and he was so egregious, the way he acted in the Beis HaMikdash. Ma'asa, what did he do? Tafas Zona B'yadu, he takes a prostitute with him into the Beis HaMikdash, but not only into the Beis HaMikdash, is Nichnas the Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, he walks into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, V'hitziah Sefer Torah, he burns a Sefer Torah, Va'avar Aleha Aveira, not only does he spread out a Sefer Torah on the floor to be his mattress, but Avar Aleha Aveira, he lies down on the Sefer Torah with the prostitute in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, violates an Aveira, V'natal Sayif, he takes a sword, V'gider Es HaParoches, and he stabs the Paroches, V'nasa Neis, and a miracle happens, V'hayadam Mevatzveitz V'yotze, when he took a sword, and he stabs the Paroches, all of a sudden, blood starts squirting out of the parochas. Now, where's that coming from? There was nobody there. So that was a simon min hashamayim, like God said, you stuck a dagger into my heart, you killed me. Because Sabar, and he thought, shahara gesatzmo. What does it mean, he thought he killed himself? So that's a euphemism. It really means he thought he killed the Ribbono Shel Olam. He thought, look, I got him. The blood came squirting out of the parochas. It means I just killed God. Rav Asher Weiss once told me, maybe this is what it means in the Haggadah when we say, the Rasha lefi shahosi etz atzma min haklal kafir beikar. What do you mean? Because he took himself out? So he said, no, maybe it means, based on this Gemara, lefi shahosi etz atzma. The Gemara sometimes uses atzma to mean the Ribbono Shel Olam. Lefi shahosi etz atzma min haklal, since you take the Ribbono Shel Olam out of the equation, kafir beikar, you're an apikoros. And that's what the Gemara says here as well. He thought, Titus, that he successfully actually killed the Ribbono Shel Olam. Shenemar, Shagut Sarecha Bekerav Ma'adecha Samu Osa Sam Osas. Abba Chanan says, Mi Kamocha Chasin Ya, Mi Kamocha Chasin Rikasha. Who is like the Ribbono Shel Olam, who is so strong, Sha'ata Shomean, the Yutsa V'Gidufa Shalosa Rasha V'Shosek, that you're able to sit and listen to this humiliation from this lowlife, Titus, and you just sit there quietly, you let him do whatever he wants to do. Devei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, Rabbi Shmuel said, Mi Chamocha Be'elam Hashem, Mi Chamocha Be'alamim. Who is like you, God, that is able to be quiet while such a terrible thing is going on? And that's basically the experience that happened at the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Titus did whatever he wanted. God didn't get involved at all. He allowed him to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and that was the end of that. What exactly did Titus do? He goes and he destroys it, but after that he wasn't finished. Ma'asa, Natalas HaParochas, he takes the Paroches that was standing in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he takes it down, Ve'aso Kimin Gargusni, he makes it into a basket, Ve'hevi Kol Kelim Shebe'Migdash Ve'hinicha Mehem, he takes all the Kelim in the Beis HaMikdash, stuffs it into this new makeshift basket, and walks out of the Beis HaMikdash with it. Voshivim Bisvina, he puts it all in a boat. Leilech liyishtabeach b'iro. He wants to bring it back to his hometown. They're going to make a big parade. Look what Titus was able to successfully accomplish. Shenemar v'chein ra'isi v'shoim kivurim. Ubal mimakom kadosh yalecha v'yishtachu b'iro asher kein asu. Al tikre kivurim ela kivutzim. Al tikre v'yishtachu ela v'yishtabchu. So here he takes all of these things that he gathered together, the kivutzim, all the items from the Beis HaMikdash, and he goes back to his hometown. Vayishtabchu, and he goes and he praises himself, and the whole town is rallying behind him over the fact that he had the ability to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Ika the Amri, some say kavur mamish, that it means in the pasuk he found things that were actually buried into the ground. Da'afilu mili dimitamran iglai lahon. He was able to even uncover secrets in Yerushalayim that nobody knew about. He was able to uncover, to dig things up from the ground in Yerushalayim. Even that he took back with him. So here he is on the boat, and he's traveling back to his hometown with all the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, and he wants to go and tell everybody what he was able to accomplish. Amad, while he's on the boat, Amad Alav Nachshol Shebeyam Latovo. A tornado comes as he's on the boat, and he's about to drown. Amar, he says, oh, God thinks he's going to get me. This is no special God. Kimaduma ani shalohem shalelu engru as elabamayim. Oh yeah, there's a tornado now at sea. God only has power in the sea. How do I know that? Because Paro starts causing trouble for the Jewish people. How does God punish him? The water. But Sisra, much later on in history, comes along. He also starts to make trouble. Tava b'mayim. God comes around as well. And he goes and he buries him in the water. He drowns him in the water. Afu amin alayla tavena b'mayim. Says Titus HaRasha, this God is nothing. So he only has power in the water. He's going to drown me in the water also. That's the best he can do. So God says to him, Im Giber, who Titus says, if God is really something special, Yala li abasha v'yasa ibn b'chama, come, fight out the war, let's see if you can do anything outside of the water. You only know to punish in the water, let's see if you can get me outside. Okay. Yatsa sabaskol, a heavenly voice comes out and says, v'amrlo, Rasha ben oshal Esav Rasha. Titus, you are wicked, you're from the family of Esav that was already wicked from day one. I have a beryakala, I have a tiny creature. Yeshli ba'olami v'yitush shemo. It is called a gnat. Amaykar they bury a kala. Why is it called a small insect? Demalna isla, that it has a way to intake food. And mafakna lesle, it has no way to excrete any food from its body. Alali abasha, he says, you come up to the dry land. V'tasa ima melchama. I'm not going to make a big melchama. I'm not going to make a big tornado. I'm going to take the smallest creature in the world, and that's what's going to destroy you. How can that be? How can an ant destroy somebody? Well, says the Gemara, Alele Abasha, he comes up, Titus comes up to the dry lands, Ba Yitush, and a gnat comes, V'nichnas b'chotmo, and it goes straight, flies into his nose, V'nakar b'mocho sheva shanam, and 7 years straight, this gnat is knocking around in his head and making him crazy. Yumachad, after 7 years of this perpetual headache, Yumachad habekachalaf ababa de benafcha, one fine day, Titus HaRasha is trying to deal with his problem. He happens to walk by the home of a blacksmith. Shama kol arzafte, the gnat inside of his head hears a hammer that's banging in the blacksmith's shop. Ishtik, and I was able to get it to be quiet. Amar, Satita says, oh, great idea. That's the only way to get this headache to go away. Ikatakanta. Kol yoma maisi nafcha machu kame. Why don't I bring somebody every day who's going to sit there and bang with the hammer? This way at least I won't have the headache anymore. Lenachri, when a non-Jew came and volunteered to do the job, yav le arbezuze. He gave him a payment of 4 rubles. For whatever they were called then. The Yisrael, when a Jew came to do the job of the banging, Armalei, Mistayach de Kachazis Besanach. You're lucky that you're able to see your enemy suffer. I'm not going to pay you anything. Ad Lasin Yomin, this trick worked for 30 days. So, 30 days, he had people coming every day, coming and banging away on the hammer, and that was able to get the animal inside of his head to stop making noise. Mikan Ve'elech, after 30 days, Kivan de Dash Dash, the fly inside of his head got used to the noise, and now it didn't make an impression on it anymore. So, this is something that also has very important halachic consequences, and that is that 30 days we consider to be a regilus. Whenever you see something 30 days in a row, that's considered to be a regilus. So for example, we know that we have all kinds of birchas haroah. We have all kinds of brachas you're supposed to say if you see some unusual scene. Let's say you go to the Yam HaGadol, you go to the Mediterranean, you go, you see Harim Gedolim, you see something very unusual, the Alps. The only time you say that is when you're nispoil, when it's something that you're amazed by it. The only way you're amazed is when you haven't seen him in 30 days. Why? Because once you've seen him within 30 days, it's nothing special anymore. That's learned from this Gemara as well. Let's say the Bir Agra writes, why do we stop blowing the shofar on Erev Rosh Hashanah? We've been blowing it all month of Elul. All of a sudden, Erev Rosh Hashanah, we stop. You should blow on Erev Rosh Hashanah in order to know what you're doing on Rosh Hashanah. That's the practice. Says the Vilna Gaon, why do we stop? Not Kedei La'arvavas HaSatan, but says the Vilna Gaon, the reason why is because if you do it for 30 days straight, then you're going to have a regilus. Then when you do it in a Rosh Hashanah, it's not going to mean anything to you anymore. So therefore he says, we stop specifically in order that we shouldn't have such a regilus. It shouldn't be something that's usual to us, that's common, because over here the Gemara says, if you do something 30 days in a row, it doesn't mean anything anymore. You get used to it. So therefore, the Vilna Gaon suggests that's why we stop the day before Rosh Hashanah, in order that we shouldn't have a regilus to that sound, and it shouldn't be something that we ignore. 10 lines from the bottom. Tanya Amara Pinchas ben Aruva. Ani Ayisi ben Gedoli Romi. I was there at the time when Titus Harasha died. Ukshames, when Titus died, Patsu es mocho. Everybody wanted to know what was that headache going on in his head. What was happening? So they did a autopsy. They opened up his head. Umatsubo, and they find a creature in there. Kitsipa Dura, they find like a wild bird that was growing in his head. Mishkal Snei Shlaim. That was a tremendous size. Now obviously this is an allegory. It must mean something else. A person can't have a bird growing in their head. That's tremendous. But it's something important to keep in mind whenever we learn Agadah to Gemaras. And that is the following. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, in his generation, he said, you know, a lot of people used to ask about how are you supposed to understand. You see an Agadah to Gemara like this. How do you understand what it means? Right? He had a bird in his head that was the size of a big eagle. Doesn't make any sense. So Rabbi Yisrael, I'm not saying the Gemara doesn't make sense, but when we read it, it doesn't really make sense to us. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said the following. He said, in his generation, he remembers that there was two countries that were fighting with each other, and then finally they declared war one fine day. One king got up and he declared war, and there was all that war. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, the next day in the newspaper it said, one drop of ink kills 10,000 people. What do you mean, one drop of ink kills 10,000 people? So if you're alive at the time, you understand what it means. What does it mean? It means one drop of ink, the decree of the king with one drop of ink, has the power to kill 10,000 people the next day, because now the soldiers go out, they fight the war, and everybody gets killed. Said Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, in 100 years from now, they're going to read the front cover of the newspaper, they're going to say, one drop of ink killed 10,000 people. You're out of your mind? How could a drop of ink kill anybody? You can drop a drop of ink on somebody's head in their mouth, they still won't be killed. So what does it mean? Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, if you lived at the time and you understood the context, there wouldn't be a question. Of course it would make sense. So he said, sometimes you have to think from that perspective as well. Sometimes when you have an Agadah to Gemara, it doesn't mean it doesn't make sense. It means perhaps at the time it made a lot of sense. Everybody understood what it meant, and therefore the Gemara didn't feel the reason that we had to elaborate. But that's something Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said in general whenever you read a Gemara. So that's over here as well. It says maybe it was like a big bird that was in his head. It was a very heavy bird. And the Gemara says maybe it had a piv shel nechoshes, that had a beak that was made out of copper. Vitziponov shel barzel, it had a fingernails that were made out of some other metal. It's hard to understand what that means, but basically he had some kind of bird that was growing in his head. Kiavika Mayas, when he died, Amr Lahu, he said, Likliyu Lahu Gavra Vili Badri Lu Lakemi Yashav Yami. Titus gave instructions, I'd like you to burn my ashes, to cremate my body, and spread the ashes all over the seven oceans of the world. Telolishkeche Elahad Yehudai Vilukmen Bedina. Why did he want that? Why did he want to be cremated? Because he said, if I get cremated, God's not going to be able to find me. He won't be able to punish me. So if you spread my ashes all over the place, how's he going to punish me? It's an amazing thing. So you think about it, sometimes it's considered to be a very serious problem if a Jewish person wants to be cremated. And it's something we try very hard to convince those who may have left instructions to be cremated that they should reconsider, they should not do such a thing. Now, that's something that it depends what the reason why somebody's being cremated, what the punishment for such a thing is. So there are some people who... Am I confusing between cremation and committing suicide? Yeah, I'm confusing. Maybe I'm making a mistake. I think the Achronim say that there's such a thing that there were people who did this kederach hafilosofim because they thought this is the right way to live life, is to commit suicide or to life is not worth living, not because they were depressed or anything like that, but because they decided that this is the right way of life, is not to live at all or to be cremated, not to believe in the afterlife or something like that. So in such a case, we say that's a very serious punishment that comes to a person who feels that way. But on other occasions, we have people who are cremated not because of any ideological, theological reasons, but just because of money. It's very expensive to be buried. Or you have people who commit suicide not because they believe life is not about living, but because life is so depressing for them, life is so difficult. And unfortunately, every once in a while, somebody takes their life as a result of an emotional imbalance or something so difficult in life. And therefore, the rules would change a lot. So here you have a case where Titus Harasha believed he wanted to be cremated. Why? Because he didn't want God to find him. You think he's not going to find you? You think you're going to be able to hide? So that's what Tito says. He says, I want you to take my ashes and spread them all over the world. This way God can never punish me. Now, Uncalus bar Clunicus, bar achte de Titus habi. Uncalus, the great Uncalus, was a nephew of the infamous Titus Harasha. Boi legire, as strange as it is, Uncalus wanted to become a convert. Azal aske de Titus benegida. So as Uncalus is considering the process, so every convert who's going through the process has to do the due diligence. So most people go to classes, they consult with others who have converted, they want to know how is it going to be to integrate into the Jewish community. Well, Uncalus decides, I have a great idea. I had somebody by the name of Titus who was my uncle. Why not figure out how to get Titus's attention upstairs? Why don't I ask him, what do you think? Now that you're upstairs, can you give me some advice? What do you think is the right thing to do? So, Azil aske le Titus benegida. Now, for most of us, that's not an option because we don't know how to communicate with people who are upstairs. But Uncalus obviously knew how to do that. So, Uncalus brings him with some kind of black magic and he has a conversation with Titus. Amar le, man chashabahu alma, can you tell me, now that you see the truth, now that you're upstairs, tell me, did he do right or did he do wrong? Are you the one who destroyed the Jewish people and that was the wrong thing? Or maybe the Jewish people are pretty good and this is something I should become a part of. Amar le, Yisrael ma'u ledvuke behu. He says, what would you say about the fact that I'm considering conversion? Do you think it's a good idea? Amar le, he says back to him, Milayu nefishin, he says, look, the Jewish people are wonderful. The problem is they have so many mitzvahs, alam matzahs lekemunah. You're never going to have the ability to actually perform all those mitzvahs. So I would suggest stay away. Zil agribahu, he says, I have a different idea for you. Titus suggests him, he says, you should employ them, you should make them work for you, bahu alma, in this world, bahavis resha. If you're the one who's the boss of the Jews, you will go on top, tachsiv, because it says in Eich on the first parak, hayutza reha l'rosh, that the ones who are meitzar, the Yisrael, kala meitzar the Yisrael, he or she who causes pain to the Jewish people, nasa rosh will become the one in charge. Tosis writes in Maseches Chagiga, why is that? How can we assume the one who gives pain to the Jewish people is going to be rewarded for that? You're going to be the one in charge. Tosis writes in Maseches Chagiga the same idea that we said before. Because otherwise it's not good for the Jewish, meaning once the Jewish people have to be subservient to someone, they may as well be subservient to somebody very prominent. This way the world can at least see that they're working for somebody who's very special, who's very unique, who's very unusual. So over here, Titus says to him, maybe that's a good idea. Amalei, he says, oh, while I have you here, Titus, I'm curious, Tita dahu gavra b'mai, what is your punishment in Olam Haba? What's the story? Amalei, b'mai depasik anapsha, he says, look, I asked that they take my body and they cremate it. So he says, the problem is, the reason why I asked for cremation is because I wanted that they should take my ashes, spread it all over the world, and God shouldn't be able to find me. He says, well, God actually listened to my prayers. So kol yoma, every day, mechanshi le lekudmei, every day they gather up all of my ashes from all the different rivers in the world, v'dayni le, and they go make me go through a process again of adjudication, v'kalu le, and then they burn me again, they cremate me as I wished, umavadri ashev yami, then they spread me around all over the world, and then we start all over again the next day. Azalaske le bilamin agida. So then Uncalus says, you know, that was not a conclusive meeting, why don't I try to call somebody else and get an expert opinion about whether or not I should become a convert? So he brings Bilam, also in black magic, and he asks him, I'd like to know, why is it, you started off with the Jewish people as well, what do you think is a good idea for me? Amalei, he says, man chashabahu alma. Amalei Yisrael, Bilam says, look, the Jewish people are the ones who are the greatest. Mahu ladvuke behu. So Uncalus asks him, what would he think? Is it worthwhile for me to become a part of them? Amar lei, lo sidro shlomo v'tavasim kalayam, don't get involved with the Jewish people, stay away from them. Amar lei, so he says, oh, Bilam, while I have you here, I'm curious, what is your punishment in Olam Haba, in Olam HaEmes? What is God doing to you? He says, Amar lei, b'shichvas zera rasachas. Every day I get burnt in a big pot of boiling semen. Why is that? Rashi explains, because Bilam is the one who gave the command that Benos Moab should go and be mezana with the Jewish people. As a punishment for that, for the znus that came about as a result of his idea, therefore God punishes him with that very same kind of substance. Azal askim benegida l'poshe Yisrael. Then he brings other people down to have a conversation with them. Amar lei, man chashabahu alma. Amar lei, Yisrael, ma ladvukibuhu. Do you think it's worth becoming a part of the Jewish people? Amar lei, tovasam drosh, ra'asam lo sidrosh. Kol hanogea b'hem, anyone who gets involved with them. It's like you're touching your own pupils, and that's going to be very damaging. Amar lei, so he says to them, Dine dahu gavra b'mai, what is your punishment? You people were poshe Yisrael, you were born as Jews, but you're doing the wrong thing. What is your punishment? Amar lei, they said back to him, B'tzoa rosachas, we get punished every day with excrement. We're in a boiling hot pot of excrement, and that's the way we are punished. Amar Mar, why are we being punished like that? Kol Amaleg al Divrei Chachamim, anyone who makes fun of Dinim Derabbanan or of the edicts of the Chachamim of any generation, have to be very careful about this, Nidon Betzoa Rosachas, is going to have quite a serious punishment in the Olam HaEmes. And this is something, unfortunately, that we see all the time. People nowadays, that we have the internet and we have a public forum to say whatever we want and a platform to write whatever we want, people feel that they have the opportunity to just write anything about anybody, and we have to be very concerned about the statement that the Gemara says, even if we mean it as a joke, but other people might misinterpret what we're saying and take it out of context and actually take it seriously and make fun of Talmidei Chachamim. It's something that the Gemara sees as a very serious crime. Tachazi, says the Gemara, Ma'avein Poshe Yisrael Nevi Umas Ha'olam of the Avodah Zarah, says the Gemara, look at the difference between Poshe Yisrael and the Navi Umas Ha'olam of the Avodah Zarah and Bilam HaRasha. Tanya Amar Belezer, Borei Kama Gedola Kocha Shal Busha. Look how seriously God takes Busha. Look how much He considers it to be something that is punishable for. Why? Sharei Siya HaKadosh Baruch Hu Es Bar Kamtza. What happened here? This whole story started because Bar Kamsa, one Eisvarf, who was probably a lowlife in the first place, what kind of person would come up with such a plan as a revenge because they were embarrassed by a meal? Come on, how far are you going to go? You're going to destroy the whole place of Mikdash, the whole Jewish people, get people killed and have the siege and everything. All that because you were humiliated at a party. So we're probably dealing with someone who was a lowlife in the first place, and yet, says the Gemara, Kama Gedola Kocha Shel Busha. How much we have to be considerate about other people's embarrassment. Sherei Siya HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Bar Kamsa, because the Ribbono Shel Olam actually assisted Bar Kamsa, and as a result, Hecher Ves Beso Visarath as Heichalo. As a result, God actually destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and there was so much that came about as a result of that. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz has a beautiful piece where he writes in the Sichas Musar that we have the story about Chana and Penina. So Chana and Penina, as we know, one of them was able to have children, one was not, and we know that Chana was the woman who unfortunately was not blessed with children for many, many years, and Penina was having child after child, and she was v'chiyasata tzara. The Pasuk says she was giving some, she was making it uncomfortable for Chana. But the Gemara says, Penina l'shem shamayim nischavna. Why did she do that? Because she said, if I make it uncomfortable for her, she'll realize it's at a very critical stage. I have to be mispala. I have to supplicate myself before God, and maybe He'll bless me with a child. Penina had all the right intentions, and yet the Gemara says that Penina was punished as a result of that which she caused Chana to feel bad about not having children. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz asks, why? If she was the Shem Shemayim Niskavna, if I have the right intention, what could be bad? Why am I punished? So the answer, says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, is because Bein Adam Lachaver is like fire. You can have the best of intentions. When there's a fire and you stick your hand in, you're going to get burnt. Even if you're trying to save something important, even if you're trying to save something valuable, if you stick your hand into a fire, you're going to get burnt. Same thing over here, he says. You start up with other people's feelings. Doesn't matter how wonderful your intentions are. Bein Adam Lachaver is fire. You're going to get burnt. Doesn't matter. And you can have all the noble intentions and you want to bring about a greater good. But think about the fact that you're playing with somebody's fire. You're playing with somebody's Bein Adam Lachaver. Whenever you do that, there's a very serious risk that comes along with that. Chaim Shalevitz points out on this week's parsha, actually, the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, we have Moshe Rabbeinu begins to give his valedictory address to the Jewish people, and he begins to talk to them about all the mistakes that they made throughout the years, throughout the many, many years, the decades that they were in the Midbar. So he tells them, V'lavan v'chatziros v'dizahav, and Rashi says all these different places that he mentions are because he didn't want to really say it outright. It's just his kirim b'remes b'pnei kavod n'shel Yisrael. He didn't want to say outright, and you made a mistake about the ego, and you made a mistake about the meraglim and all the other things in the be'er. He didn't want to talk about it, so he just said, made a reference to them, that was his musar to the Jewish people. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, why was Moshe Rabbeinu doing that? Because he was worried about the dignity of the Jewish people. How could I compromise the dignity of the Jewish people? And even though he says, I had a mitzvah of tochacha, Moshe Rabbeinu had a mitzvah to be mochiach the Jewish people. Ochech tochiach asamisecha. They made mistakes. They're waiting to hear his musar shmuz. They need to hear it. They need to be hit over the head before Moshe Rabbeinu dies. But yet Moshe Rabbeinu says, there's a way in which we have to do it. There's a way in which we give tochacha. Just because you have a mitzvah of tochacha doesn't give you the right to humiliate someone. I think about it so often. As parents, we need to every so often tell our children something that they've done wrong. And sometimes you watch parents who think that means that they have the liberty to just give tochacha and embarrass their children. So a kid does something, runs into the street, does all kinds of things. You think you have a right just to embarrass, to humiliate your child just because they're doing something wrong. And yes, it's something dangerous and it's something very wrong. But Moshe Rabbeinu here had also a mitzvah to give tochacha, and yet there's a sensitivity that needs to be involved in that tochacha process, because bein adam lachaveru is fire. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz goes so far as to say, we're going to stop here, I see it's already late, but Reb Chaim Shmulevitz even goes so far as to say that when you think about the Medrash by Bilam HaRasha, what happens? Bilam is hired to go and curse the Jewish people. What happens at the end of that story? In the end, Bilam's plans were foiled. In the end, Bilam has a donkey that's able to shut him up, and Bilam isn't able to do what he wanted to do. And Bilam is left going back to his own town. He wasn't able to do anything. He couldn't accomplish what he was hired to do. And yet we see over there, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, as you look in Rashi, what happened after the story was over? Rashi tells us, in the name of the Medrash, that the Ribbono Shel Olam decided that we have to kill that asan, we have to kill the donkey, we have to take its life away. Why do we have to kill the donkey? What did the donkey do wrong? Why does it deserve to die? Rashi says, Nebuch, you feel bad for Bilam, don't you? What's going to happen? Everybody subsequently who passes by the donkey is going to say, aha, that's the donkey of Bilam. That's the donkey that was better than Bilam, the lowlife. And Nebuch, we feel bad for him. Because Bilam is not around to stick up for himself, to defend himself. Don't you feel bad for him? Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, you feel bad for Bilam? He's Bilam. He's the lowlife of the generation. He's the one who tried to destroy the Jewish people. And not only that, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, if it was up to me, I would take this donkey, I would travel around the world with it, I would honor it at every shul dinner all over the country. Why? Look what happens. What a kiddush Hashem. Look what happens. You try to start up with the Jewish people. A donkey is better than you. And yet the Ribbono Shel Olam says, no, we got to take the life of the donkey. Why? Because Ben Adam HaChaveru, even Bilam. You can have somebody who violates the worst averus in the world. You can have somebody who's mechal Shabbos, somebody who doesn't keep kosher, somebody, everything. And they're doing it b'meiza, not their tinuk shenishba. Somebody's doing it b'meiza, they know nothing at all. Nothing at all. And yet, there's a way in which we need to deal with that. Because bein adam l'chaveru is fire. You could be the Bilam HaRasha of the generation. And you can even risk the great and colossal Kiddush, unbelievable Kiddush Hashem that could come about if only you would go ahead and show that donkey to the world, and people could be so inspired. But all that inspiration is worth nothing if it's at the cost of the sensitivity of Bilam HaRasha. He deserves to be punished. God took care of his punishment, but more than that, he doesn't deserve. And I think if we can walk away from one thing, from all these Haggadot to Gemaras, that is a very important message, and that's what the Gemara tells us. It is the feelings of Bar Kamsa that bring about such a destruction. And you say to yourself, how did God allow that to happen? Because of one person? Really, is one person worth more than the Jewish people? The answer is yes. One person's feelings is worth more than the entire Jewish people. Rav Soloveitchik said, I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but I'm reminded of other things. Rav Soloveitchik once gave a drasha, he said, what would happen when you have the Kohen Gadol, and he's being in his Prisha 7 days before Yom Kippur? You know, the Mishnah says in Maseches Yuma, for 7 days before the Avodah on Yom Kippur, they separate the Kohen Gadol. He's not allowed to be part of the outside world. He's doing all those things. He's probably purifying his thoughts, and he's doing all wonderful things. One fine day, you know, it's been an intense couple of days, he decides, okay, it's Erev Yom Kippur, I may as well go outside, go for a little spatzir out in the woods around the Beis HaMikdash. Look, I got to clear my mind a little bit. Some is Bodidus, maybe. It's a good idea. So he takes out his Reb Nachman, he goes out to the forest for his Bodidus. It's a great idea. What happens? As he's on the walk, he's ready to go, and he's all the purest of intentions, nothing wrong at all. He goes out into the forest, and what happens? He passes, chances upon, a Meis Mitzvah. Now he's faced with a problem. What do I do? It's Erev Yom Kippur. It's a Meis Mitzvah lying here in the park. Now, if I go and I'm entombing myself, the entire Jewish people will have nobody to do the Avodah on Yom Kippur. Maybe they'll have the assistant Kohen Gadol, but as we know, he's not as good as the real. He wasn't preparing for 7 days. He doesn't know the ropes. He didn't do it the last 20 years. I know what I'm doing. So the entire Avodah for the entire Jewish people on Yom Kippur, which is the holiest day of the year, in the holiest place, Kodesh HaKadoshim, is going to be destroyed. If I go ahead and I'm entombing myself to the Meis Mitzvah. On the other hand, how can I leave a Meis Mitzvah out here in the park? One of the greatest mitzvahs a person can ever accomplish. So he's faced with a dilemma. What am I supposed to do? And not only that, Siddur of Soloveitchik, who is generally the Meis Mitzvah? Meis Mitzvah is a person who has no relatives. He's probably the alcoholic who everybody gave up on. Nobody cares about it. Not contributing anything positive to society. Nobody noticed he was gone. Nobody noticed he was dead. He was sitting in the park for 3 weeks already. Nobody bothered to go look for him. That's the Meis Mitzvah. And Seder of Soloveitchik, if the Kohen Gadol even vacillates for a minute about whether or not he should do it, he's not fit to be the Kohen Gadol. You want to be a leader of the Jewish people, it means you have to have the sensitivity to understand even that lowlife, even the Meis Mitzvah, who you think is not contributing anything to society at all, and you think there's nothing positive coming out of his life, and I have such an important job, and I'm there representing the entire Jewish people on Yom Kippur in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, doesn't matter. That person's life is more valuable than everything that you're about to do. And Tzedev Soloveitchik, based on a Tosfos in Maseches Nazir, if you even hesitate for a moment as the Kohen Gadol, it means you're simply not fit to be a Kohen Gadol. You don't know what it means to be a Jewish leader. You don't know what it means to have a sensitivity for another person. Yes, you have important things to do, but if somebody needs your time, you're to give up all of your time for that important thing that needs to be done, because that's more important than everything else that you're doing. Our sensitivity to other people is something that trumps everything else that we do. And I thought so much about this because I happen to be a tremendous, it's a strange thing to say, a fan of Reb Shlomo Zalman. You're not fans of Talmidei Chacham, but I'm so inspired by the life of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, because the more stories you read about him, the more you see how sensitive, how caring a person he was, not just for his own community, but for everyone. So I said over a story this past week, I don't think people were there, but I said over a story this past week, I don't mean there was no one there, I mean I think the people in the room were not there, so I don't usually talk to myself. So the story was told to me by Tzviki Lau. Tzviki Lau is the youngest son of Rabbi Lau. I used to share a car ride with him every Tuesday night after Rav Asher Weiss's shir. He would drive Rav Asher Weiss back to Ramot, and he would drop me off in the Mir Yeshiva from Beit Vegan. So we spoke a lot. So I remember one fine week, it was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's Yahrzeit. And I was so inspired by the story. He said over the story that his father had told him, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, that Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, there was a person who was representing the Haredi community in Eretz Yisrael in the government, and he was negotiating for the longest time with the mayor of Yerushalayim that they should close down the roads in Yerushalayim on Shabbos. Because after all, it's Chil Shabbos, it's terrible for the Chinuch of our children, how do they see the cars driving on Shabbos? He was very upset. So he was negotiating for a long time they should close the roads. Just so happened to be, finally one day, the mayor of Yerushalayim calls him up. He says, okay, we got a deal. Here's the map. I'm going to show it to you. You're going to sign it. We got a deal. So he looks at the map. He starts studying it over and over. And he says, look, I can't sign it until I go speak to an Adam Gadol. He thought he's going to an Adam Gadol. Why? Because the Adam Gadol is going to say, well, that's not enough streets. You got to negotiate for more. You can't sign it yet. He'll go back to the mayor. He said, no, not good. We got to redraw the map. Not good enough. Meanwhile, he chooses to go to Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He comes to Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's house. He shows him the map. Reb Shlomo Zalman turns to him. He says, are you out of your mind? You're going to sign such a thing? He's all excited. Oh, Reb Shlomo Zalman's not letting him sign it. Reb Shlomo Zalman says to him, aren't you thinking about the fact that there are so many unaffiliated Jews who are driving on Shabbos? And now that you're closing the streets, you're going to cause them to be Mechal Shabbos more. Because now they have to take a detour around all those closed streets until they get to their house. It doesn't cross your mind? You're a leader of the Jewish people, you're representing the Haredi community, it doesn't bother you? That's not something you ever thought about? Shlomo Zalman didn't let him sign it. Because how can we not think about other people? Doesn't matter that they don't have the same level of observance, doesn't matter anything. How do you not think from their perspective? What is such a decision going to mean to them? What is it going to mean to their Shabbos? You think their Shabbos is not important? It is important. It means something to God. And that's exactly what the Nefesh HaChaim writes as well that we started with. Sometimes a person who has too much anava, sometimes a person has misguided anava. They don't understand. It's not a place to be humble and say, oh, God doesn't care about me. God does care about you. You could be the unaffiliated Jew who doesn't know anything about Shabbos, but one more ounce of chil Shabbos by your driving that you shouldn't have done is something significant in the eyes of God. It's something we need to think about as people who do understand what Shabbos is. We need to be sensitive to that as well, because that's something that a Jew always thinks about. That's what the Kohen Gadol on Erev Yom Kippur, walking out in the forest, right before he's about to do the Avodah, he has to think about that also. And if he hesitates for a moment, he's not worthy of being the leader of the Jewish people, because that's what the Jewish people are all about. And that's what makes us have good times, that's what makes us have good days, and that's where the Gemara tells us, unfortunately, so much of our calamity, unfortunately, so much of the terrible tragedy that comes about to the Jewish people is something that is always able to be traced back to very terrible attitudes that sometimes we harbor toward other Jews or other people, other members of our own community. So we'll stop here.